Good morning. May it please the court, Joffrey McWilliam on behalf of the defendants. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes if I may. Thank you. The issue before the court is whether, under this court's decision in King v. Olympic Pipeline, the trial court erred by refusing to grant a short 6-month stay in the face of a parallel overlapping criminal investigation. And the defendants respectfully submit that the trial court failed to correctly apply the Olympic Pipeline factors, that its decision was not only unsupported by the facts, but was contrary to the facts, that under the totality of the circumstances, the decision was unreasonable, and that the trial court failed on reconsideration to engage in an on-the-record balancing as it was required to do.
Let me see if we can focus the inquiry from your perspective a little bit more. Are you concentrating on the facts as they existed after you renewed the motion for the stay and presented the additional evidence to the trial court? Is that the record at the time of the denial of the last now that you're asking us to apply the Olympic Pipeline? They're not really standards, and they're not
the
really
factors.
Considerations,
okay.
Too.
The answer is, by the time we moved for reconsideration, absolutely.
So were you moving for reconsideration, or were you moving to renew the motion?
I would say under Olympic Pipeline, we were moving to renew. We called it a motion for reconsideration. That's kind of what you do in that circumstance. But Olympic Pipeline clearly...
I've had many lawyers file a document that they entitle a motion for clarification. I don't know what the heck that is, and I sure can't find any such thing mentioned in the civil rules. And so I treat it for what it is. Does it really matter what a lawyer calls a particular request for relief? I mean, under the law, it is whatever it is, right? No matter what you can...
I would agree with
call
that.
It vanilla. If it's chocolate, it's chocolate. Right?
I agree. And yes, new facts had been obtained. New facts were presented. As we've stated in the briefing, and it seems like the court is interested in whether this was reconsideration or not, CR 59 doesn't apply here. We've argued that, and first and
so did you argue that to Judge Ramsdale?
Yes, I believe we did. Yes, I mean, and we argued it on appeal. But
well, I know on appeal.
Yes, that was argued. Absolutely.
So Judge Ramsdale was not misled.
I don't believe so. No, not at all. I mean, we presented new information. Clearly, it met the standard. He did not rule.
What standard? I mean, you know, if it's a motion to renew, it's not a CR-59.
Whether it was a motion to renew, which we believe Olympic Pipeline clearly anticipates is proper, and that under Olympic Pipeline, when you're looking at these factors or guidelines, the case clearly states that things change over time, and the court should look at new facts as circumstances change over time. Clearly, that's what happened in Olympic Pipeline.
So not CR 59, but an Olympic Pipeline analysis.
Well, either. I mean, that clearly is what Olympic Pipeline states. But even if you applied CR 59, that is not a basis to affirm the trial court's decision. And here's why. The trial court went to the evidence. It looked at the evidence. It went to the merits in that second motion. It decided the merits. They argued that it shouldn't have done that, but it did. It went there. It decided the merits. It did not say that this was newly discovered evidence. There was no motion to strike. In this court's opinion in Jacobs Meadows, that's an absolute clear requirement. If you say this is newly discovered evidence, you better move to strike it. They didn't do that. The court didn't strike it. It went to the merits, and that should put the issue to bed. But even if that didn't, you then get to Olympic Pipeline, which says – this isn't how we look at this situation. We're dealing with constitutional issues here. We're dealing with Fifth Amendment rights. You're also dealing with information that is coming from a reticent federal authority. They're not going to tell you what they're doing if they don't have to. They did here. They absolutely here confirmed that the defendants were not merely witnesses. They were more than that. So that was new information. So even if you go into that CR 59 analysis, it's met. But the trial court never held that CR 59 had not been met, and they argued it vociferously to the trial court. On top of that, what is perhaps most galling about that argument to the defendants is that we requested in discovery about a year prior all of their communications with the federal authorities, and they produced nothing. On the initial motion, we asked for more time to determine. We again asked whether we could have those. They were not produced. Instead, the defendants forced the plaintiffs forced the issue by immediately moving to compel. That's what forced the initial motion to stay, based on the limited information we had available at that time. And that was after the FBI said, just before depositions, an agent is coming to the depositions. They're going to sit in on the depositions. It's in an official capacity. Once that was the first objective evidence that the defendants had.
Well, that happens all the time, doesn't it?
Well, that's the first time in my career, Your Honor. So once that information was had, then independent criminal defense counsel was hired, and they went out and eventually were able to arrange a meeting, and new information was obtained that was presented to the court. So all of that was new information, and in part it was because the plaintiffs withheld what they should have produced in discovery a year prior.
So with reasonable diligence, you could not have discovered that evidence.
Correct.
So does it matter whether it's new evidence or any reasonable diligence standard? It was the evidence in front of the court at the time the court made the ruling.
Exactly.
It was an interlocutory ruling. Discretionary review was granted, and that's what we're looking at.
Exactly, Your Honor. And that's because there was never a motion to strike that evidence. It was before the court. The court reached it. In fact, when the court asked for additional...
There wouldn't be a basis to strike.
Correct, Your Honor. So that is everything is before the court, and yes, that is the focus. I will say, and my time is running out, I'll save for rebuttal, so I haven't gotten to the main Olympic pipeline factors, but I will say that what the plaintiffs are arguing with respect to there is a backward standard. They're saying, is there any, can we gin up any reasons why maybe the federal authorities aren't looking at you? The evidence is clearly to the contrary, but that standard is asking the question backwards. Under the Fifth Amendment, the question is there a danger of self-incrimination? That's the only requirement. And when you look at it from that way, applying the standard correctly, absolutely there is a danger. Absolutely the Fifth Amendment is implicated. And the trial court didn't even address that issue in its second order. And all of the other issues were just contrary to the evidence. And in fact, on overlap and on the length of stay, they also legally misapplied the Olympic pipeline factors.
We'll see you again in 10 minutes.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'm Sims Weimler on behalf of the Fair Play Receivership plaintiffs.
Are you folks going to split your time?
Yes, Your Honor. If we could please split it five and five. I'm going to try and go short.
I'm just going to let the clock run. Culturally, it's up to you to step back when you want counsel to have its time. You guys can arm wrestle afterwards if it doesn't work out right.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor,
let's narrow the procedural thing here. Let's get this squared away. Mm-hmm. Your briefing indicates that you think Rule 59 has something to do with this inquiry. When I look at the civil rules, I see that the civil rules are broken into sections by the Supreme Court. Section 7 is entitled Judgment, and then it says parens rules 54 to 63, parens. Rule 54 deals with judgment and cost. Rule 55 deals with default judgments. Rule 56 deals with summary judgments. Rule 57 deals with declaratory judgments. Rule 58 deals with entry of judgment. Rule 60 deals with relief from judgment. Rule 61 is reserved. And Rule 62 deals with stay of proceedings to enforce a judgment. Why, given that construct of the rules, are you under the impression that Rule 59, which falls right in the middle of all of those matters dealing with judgments and post-judgment matters, that Rule 59 has any applicability to a pretrial interlocutory ruling of a trial court, an interlocutory ruling being a type of ruling that a court can change at any time and that does not become final until it inheres in the judgment. Why does Rule 59 have anything to do with our inquiry here?
Well, to begin with, the way that the motion was phrased was a motion for reconsideration and
again,
not an argument. And so you're right, Your Honor. There's a
lawyer putting something on a pleading has no impact on how I decide the
sure.
case.
And so we're only all left to grasp at straws at what authority they relied upon when they filed the motion in the first place. But reconsideration was what they were asking for, what they were asking the judge to do.
Is there any reason why Rule 59 would apply to this, to our inquiry?
Well,
in resolving these issues.
Only this, and this is the important factor, Your Honor, is that in the first order, the judge clearly walked through painstakingly every single factor. And on the second, which appeared to be a motion for reconsideration, the order is smaller. And what the defense is relying upon is the implication that he didn't walk through all the factors the second time just because it's not laid out as clearly in the second order as it was the first. That's the only import.
Okay.
Yeah. But what is critical is what the actual analysis was by the judge. And under the abuse of discretion standard, then how we view that here at the Court of Appeals.
And is there any dispute then that the record that we're looking at mm-hmm. is the record as it existed at the time that Judge Ramsdell signed the final order that he signed prior to the case coming to us for review?
Yes, Your Honor. We have no dispute with that. That's the record as it is, and that's what he considered. Well, what's important is, what were his decisions, both of them, based on untenable grounds or untenable reasons? And that's why we're here today. And if they were, then this court can review. But if not, this court has said very clearly it will not substitute its judgment for the judgment of the trial court. So untenable reasons, was the right law applied? Everyone agrees that the Olympic Pipeline factors apply.
So the argument is that Judge Ramsdell, in the second order, did not consider the Fifth Amendment right.
Right. And that in the totality of circumstances is completely unsupported by what we know of what happened in this case, what the facts were before the judge and what the judge considered in the first order. And in the second order, he said merely that nothing changed, that, yes, there might be some new pieces of information, but that nothing changed. My analysis does not change. Those are not untenable grounds. And for this court to go back and review that, for example, several pages of the reply brief were spent on the word solely. What the word solely means or doesn't mean, that's interpreting the facts. That is substituting Judge Ramsdell's judgment, which is entitled to discretion and an abuse of discretion standard, substituting this court's judgment, which, you know, in all its wisdom may be what it is, but it's not appropriate in this situation. I do see my time is getting close to half, so I'm going to step down to let my co-counsel
step up. It's not my call. It's the two of you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good morning. Scott Sims for the Chafee plaintiffs.
Okay.
I'd like to start very briefly back on the Rule 59 issue. King County Local Rule 7B6 specifically states that, which relates to civil discovery motions, specifically states that it applies to motions for reconsideration under King County Local Rule 59. So with that said,
King County have a local Rule 59 that's inconsistent with the Supreme Court's Rule 59?
Inconsistent? No, but in addition to, yes.
And so it can apply to something that the Supreme Court sets up rules that it says applies to judgments, and it can apply its rule to something other than the subject matter that the Supreme Court applies it to?
If it's not inconsistent with the Supreme Court.
If it's to a subject matter, a type of order, that's not the type of order that the Supreme Court's rule applies to, how could it be anything but inconsistent?
Because it could run parallel with. But let's move beyond that.
You're the one that wanted to bring it up again.
So let's talk just briefly about how we got here. On February 2nd of this year, Judge Ramsdell denied a motion to stay. That order, as we've talked about, is not at issue on this appeal. The order that's at issue is the February 28th order denying reconsideration, renewed motion, whatever we want to call it. That motion was filed on February 6th. That order specifically denies reconsideration At that point in time, there were really two issues that had been raised by the defendants, both based upon this meeting that they had with the U.S. Attorney's Office on February 6th. The first claim that they made was that they were, quote, subjects of a federal investigation. The second claim that they made was that this investigation supposedly would be complete within 6 months. My office and my partner, upon receipt of a declaration to that effect from defendant's criminal counsel, was surprised based upon his experience. So he sent an email. He sent an email to Assistant U.S. Attorney Susan Rowe and respectfully asked her, in essence, is this accurate? She sent back an email. That email said two things. First of all, it didn't say that defendants were subjects of a criminal investigation. It said that she told them that she, quote, could not commit to them being mere witnesses. In other words, she said she told them nothing, which is consistent with what she had told myself and Mr. Weimuller over time.
But how is that nothing?
How is that nothing? Because if you can't commit to something, that simply means that you haven't decided, you can't commit. So the question here is whether or not Judge Ramsdale could view a lack of commitment as meaning that these individuals were not necessarily subjects. Because, of course, there's been no indictment. At the time, there was no indictment. Today, there's no indictment. There's been no grand jury. There's been no grand jury subpoena.
It's not whether he can conclude that they're not subjects. It's whether he can conclude that they're not in peril.
Well, Your Honor, the test is whether or not their Fifth Amendment rights are truly implicated, which is a question in his discretion. So it's in his discretion to decide whether or not assertions that they're in peril are speculative or whether or not it's gone far enough that in consideration with the other Olympic Pipeline, I'm just going to use the word factors, even though they're not really factors, whether all those things combined are enough for their a stay to be granted. So the first issue here is that was that enough for him to use his discretion to say there's not enough, there's not a true enough implication, it's too speculative in light of a lack of indictment, in light of a lack of a grand jury subpoena. The second issue that they raised predominantly was a six-month stay. Ms. Rowe's email is very clear that all she told them was that she expected the investigation to be concluded within the statute of limitations. The conduct at issue by these defendants, that is the subject of a potential criminal inquiry, took place including in September of 2013, which means the statute would not run until September of 2018, more than another year from now. So there was ample evidence in the record for Judge Ramsdale to also conclude that those assertions were not accurate and that under the totality of the circumstances in Olympic Pipeline, he should deny the motion.
When was the escrow agreement allegedly altered?
June of 2012 is when it was altered, and the conduct in September 2013 relates to telling individuals or hiding it from individuals who had been subpoenaed by the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency.
Thank you.
Thank you.
First off, to answer your question, Your Honor, I did look in the clerk's papers, and CR 59 was argued before the trial court. It was one of the main points they made, and we, of course, addressed it as well. To address...
My question was whether you addressed it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. With regard to
and you said it didn't apply.
We said that under Olympic Pipeline, that was not an issue. The issue is you go back and look at whether this is a renewed motion.
Okay. Thank you.
And we said it was met because it was newly discovered evidence, but also because under Olympic Pipeline, whether you grant a stay is in the interests of justice, and that is a prong of CR 59.
Now, what about the Fifth Amendment? We just heard that there were only two issues, and the court didn't abuse its discretion in determining it was too speculative. What's your response?
My response is this. When you look at the totality of the circumstances, there is absolutely no way you can conclude that Fifth Amendment rights are not implicated here. They want to focus solely on the email. There is a lot more evidence than that. There's the FBI coming to the deposition in an official capacity. there is a meeting between independent defense counsel and the U.S. attorney that the plaintiffs did not attend. Experienced counsel comes out of that meeting, and they have some very definite conclusions about the risk that their clients face, the defendants here. It clearly overlaps. Nobody disputes there's overlap between the issues in the investigation and this case. And what they want to do is focus on the email, and they focus on it in a very peculiar way. That's not what it says. What that email does is confirms that you're not just a witness. It says you're still in jeopardy here. We're not going to confirm otherwise. And that's precisely the point. And then they apply the standard wrong, because the standard isn't whether you can come up with the reason that maybe charges won't be filed or maybe the investigation isn't going to end up doing anything with you. The question is there a risk? And that standard was not met.
Thank you,
Your Honor.
State Farm.